Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome to a special guest edition of the Last Round Podcast this week. And we haven't had a guest in a while, so this is a good one to return back into the motion with a guest for the last round here. He's a former boxing manager. Maybe he still is. I know he's always he's pretty much held many, many titles in the sport of boxing as a boxing manager, advisor to the likes of Marco Antonio Barrera, Dominic Salcido, Manuel Medina. He's been a matchmaker, most prominently, and vice president, most prominently for Golden Boy Promotions. Robert Diaz returns to the Last Round Podcast. Thank you for joining us, Robert.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. To all our listeners, I'm excited. Let's have some fun and let's talk what we love, boxing.
You got it. You got it. So I want to start with some of the fighters and the fights that just recently happened. Obviously, as we mentioned, and a lot of obviously boxing fans know, you were with Golden Boy Promotions, so you had a lot of experience, a lot of interactions with these fighters. Jaime Munguia coming off a recent win over John Ryder in Arizona. First, give me your reaction to that fight. What'd you think about his performance?
I thought he looked superb. I thought he looked like he enjoyed it. He had fun. I believe he was on a mission to show the world that he is ready for these big fights. I thought it was a very dangerous fight for him to take when you were hearing that the fight with Canelo is right around the corner or the talks have begun. Whoa, wait a minute. You might be getting, you know, you might be biting too much going into a Ryder fight, overlooking him, but you could see what the plan was. Look, if we can go out there and outperform what a Canelo did, this will just get more of that fans to really be eager to watch this fight eventually of two of the best Mexicans in the division, of course, with Munguia and Canelo. I really like what I saw. I saw a progress from the last fight to this fight. Ryder is no joke. He is very difficult. He's strong. He's one of those guys that have never been given anything. He's had to earn it the hard way coming up, taking some tough fights, sometimes bad decisions. But Jaime looked strong. He looked like he's setting into the weight. He looked like he had fun. I was very impressed.
And that was his first fight with Freddie Roach, as many of our listeners saw on that first night. Is there anything specific that you notice with the matchmaking career that you've had and the eye that you've had with all these fighters? Is there anything different that you noticed in this first fight with Freddie Roach?
I like what I saw with Freddie. I could see that there is a most important when you go to a trainer. It's not so much as far as for the fighter of who's the most famous trainer, who's the best trainer. It's where that click, you know, that chemistry between fighter and trainer. And already in one fight, you see Jaime clicking with him. And I saw little things. I mean, obviously I wasn't there, but from the promotion and everything, the press conference, the way – you could see Jaime always calling Freddie in, you know, so you could see that respect, but that's because of something that happened in that gym. He's earned it from Jaime's part, or Jaime's probably learning things and feeling like, wow, this is happening because, so there's that bond. You could see it already. And I could only imagine how much more in a couple more camps, how big and deeper that can get.
Now, how, you know, obviously, in boxing, we've seen fighters, you know, they switch fight trainers all the time. Some of them, it's very rare to see fighters stick with one trainer for the entire career. You know, it happens, but it's rare to see. You know, even though it's hard to speculate, could you see Munguia possibly being long term with Freddie Roach?
I don't know, because you know it's a tough position, because when things are going great, you know, a lot of times the fighter, and of course, he's the one stepping in the ring, gets all the credit. But when things go bad, somebody needs to get that finger pointed at them. because normally it's not the fighter. So it's going to be like, if a bad performance, if something happens in the next fight or so, who gets the blame? You know what? It's like, it has to be equal. You know, you rise together, you fall together, but it all depends. I mean, again, the first fight with Freddie, I saw much more comfortable. Obviously, even physically, he looked great. So that was great job by their team of how he looked, his body. He didn't look weakened. Obviously, he's now at 68. But normally a fighter, regardless if they're going up in weight, when you struggle at one weight, you're always going to struggle regardless of the weights you go up to, because there's always that, you know, cut, the weight cut. Eric Morales from 22 to 26 to 30 to 35, even at 40, he struggled, you know, in the later, even in at 140 to make the weight. But I really think we saw something. There was an improvement. There was the distance. You know, people say, oh, he's still getting hit a lot. Okay, but that's what makes Munguia fun. That's why people grasp onto Munguia, because he does go in there and get hit. You know, he's not a master boxer that is out there to counterpunch you. He's out there to try to knock out his opponent, and in the process, you're going to get hit.
In his previous fight prior to Ryder, he fought Derevchenko, I believe, at the Toyota Arena in Ontario, California. And that was a tough win. You know, he really dug down deep for that. We were in attendance for that fight. Derevchenko had moved up from 160 to 168 for that fight, I believe. But from your opinion, who do you think was a tougher fight for him? Was it Derevchenko or was it John Ryder?
Ryder, by far Ryder. Derevchenko came from 54 all the way up to the 54. That catch weight of 65 on that one. Ryder's fought his whole career at 68. Ryder's, you know, beaten some of the best names up there in the division. Personally, I did a fight against Ryder with Bilal Akaway, who was a sparring partner, stablemate of Canelo. I thought Bilal had a great chance because he's a strong Australian kid, very aggressive. And Ryder, you know, stopped him fairly quick. Callum Smith fight, the Danny Jacobs fight. I thought we were going to see, you know, obviously he is towards the tail end of his career, but that might make him even more dangerous because nothing to lose, everything to win. I mean, he beats a Munguia, he beats Jaime, maybe even a, you know, another big fight. Maybe not, probably not a Canelo rematch because he lost one-sided, but big fights are still available there for him. World title fights, big, you know, but I think obviously a lot had to do with Munguia. He's fresh. He's young. Even though that Derevchenko fight was tough, Munguia is still a young, fresh, you know, fighter. Even though he has 40 plus fights, he hasn't been in wars yet. He hasn't had the injuries from a long, long career. So we're seeing a young man that's developed. You know, he receives a lot of criticism, but you need two to step in the ring. Jaime's been willing. Jaime's been calling for the big fights for a long time now. I think it's the time has come. I think the time has come. The record's there. The experience is there. His confidence there. And now it's just, you know, what fights he can get out there.
We touched on Canelo, and obviously Chris Mannix of DAZN asked him in the post-fight about Canelo. And Munguia was obviously very respectful. It's the type of guy he is in, I guess, calling for a Canelo fight. He didn't really call him out. He just said, hey, you know, if he gives me the opportunity, let's go. It'd be an honor. I mean, what do you think is a percentage chance? You know, you've been in the game for a long time. You know, there's a lot of politics, promotional politics. You know, we understand the game. May or September, do we see a Canelo Munguia fight?
I would hope so. I mean, I love the fight. Two Mexicans. It reminds me a little bit of Barrera Morales. You know, you have the one from Mexico City, in this case, Guadalajara, fighting the native of Tijuana. I think it's a fun fight. I mean, you got to go, you know, heavily favored for Canelo. The experience, many years in the division, the weight, the ring IQ. He's been there in the biggest stages in boxing. Does Munguia, you know, just, even though he has 40 fights, it's been very few at that level, at that stage of that can compare. So, but I think while it lasts, a hell of a fight. Do we see it this year?
I think give me a percentage. What was your percentage? You just had to throw something out there.
I would say hopefully it's 50-50, but I would say about 35-40% that it happens.
Comparing Munguia to David Benavidez, obviously two Mexicans. Benavidez is essentially Mexican-American, speaks English, speaks Spanish. Munguia, born in Mexico, Spanish is his first language. As because you know you were part of Munguia's development and growth with your time at Golden Boy. With both of those, comparing both of those fighters, Benavidez and Munguia, you know, now Munguia just did this fight in Arizona. I believe he's fought in Texas. He's fought in Southern California, LA. Benavidez seems to stick primarily in Arizona, Phoenix, Glendale, and stuff like that. I mean, he's from Arizona. Who do you think has, in terms of the best performance at the gate or ground level between those two in their career so far to this point?
That's a great question. I'd have to be inclined right now based on achievements and titles and more of the names. I'd have to be with Benavidez. However, I can also say that David is at the point where he is who he is now. Can there be a little bit more improvement? Of course. Every day we get better and we learn things. We might slow something down, but learn how to use time wise. And that comes with experience and time. However, I still see some growth in Munguia. I still see some more improvement in Munguia. What I would like to see in a Munguia to make that like perfect fighter or you know, close to it, is using the more footwork where you're using the ring, because he has the size, he has that reach, he has that, but he likes to come forward a lot. That's fine. Come forward, hit, move, but using the ring, using, you know, more of that footwork where you start baiting in your opponent, bringing him to you so that you can nail him when he's coming in. Where Benavidez, David is a stalker. That's his style. That's, you know, I'm going to go out there and knock you out. I think with Munguia, you can see maybe a possible of that puncher, counterpuncher, boxer, you know, a combination where he is a knockout guy. He likes to go out there and trade. But I think if he picks up a little bit of more using the jab, using the distance, you know, more head movement, we can see more of a complete fighter in Munguia.
How do you think a matchup between a Munguia and Benavidez would play out?
Any combination of those three would be a hell of a fight. I mean, it goes back to, look, you put two Mexicans in the ring and you're going to have a war. They may come out and say, let's box a little bit. But once the first punch lands, that strategy goes out the window and they're going to say, let's just go toe to toe. And that's what fans love. You know, that's one of the reasons the Vasquez and Marquez and Barrera and Morales and those combinations were always Zárate and Zamora. We go back to the 70s. They were always great fights because screw the strategy. You know, I could lose to somebody else, but I can't lose to my own countrymen. That's the Mexican mentality.
And then for Canelo, give me who you would like to see as a fan, him fight in May and September. And then in your next answer, I'd like you to give me who the reality of him fighting in May and September is likely going to be from your perspective.
I mean, as a fan, I would love to see the Munguia and the Benavidez fight, because it's like those are the two most exciting fights that you can make. I'd probably go with Benavidez first. And that might sound crazy because it's like, wait a minute. Yeah, you always run the risk. Benavidez is the bigger guy, stronger guy, physically been there in the division for a while. But I think the Munguia fight could eventually be even bigger than the Benavidez fight. And I say that because for the boxing fans, that's a big fight, Canelo against Benavidez in Vegas. But if you take Munguia and Canelo to Mexico in a big stadium, not even Vegas. I think that's a fight that has to happen in Mexico. That's just my personal. But so I would do Benavidez, ideally, May. I don't think we're going to see that. I mean, we're already, you know, coming in mid-February. That hasn't been announced. And then September, Mexican independence. Two Mexican, you know, one the face of boxing, the top guy in Mexico, Canelo, versus that young up-and-coming guy that wants to remove him from that top position and take it over right there. I would love to see those in May and September as a fan.
And then moving on to Ryan Garcia, you know, he just did a podcast, the PBD podcast, Patrick Bet David. Well, he was on there for a good amount of time talking about different things, you know, his relationship with his promoter, his fights and all that stuff. But, you know, the last month or so, you know, he's been online calling for fights. And then at first the fans thought, oh, okay, he's going to fight Haney. Him and Haney are going back and forth. And then he comes out and says, Rolly Romero. And then we see him running with Floyd Mayweather. You know, what? You were there when he was signed. I believe, and I believe at the time when you guys signed him, wasn't it you or somebody that saw like videos of him, you know, hitting the bag or something. And you guys commented on something, maybe on Instagram or online saying, hey, you know, who are you signed to or something? I remember seeing something like that. And then I think he responded and said, oh, nobody at the time. And then within maybe like 30, 45 days, you guys signed him. You know, what do you think is the biggest difference between Ryan then and Ryan now?
Well, I signed Ryan. His manager at the time, Roger Ruiz, sent me some video. I saw him. A lot of times people would send you videos of their fighters and say, look, this is the next Chavez, the next De La Hoya, the next Tyson. And yeah, maybe there were some that, you know, came close. Many fell short. But it was funny because when I saw the video of Ryan, I was like, oh, shit, this is the next Oscar. You know, I the frame, the look, charismatic, you know, he fit. And this, we got to remember that Ryan was like 6 or 7 fights in to the pros. So, yeah, right away, we signed him. With time, like everybody, experience, learning, maturing. The Ryan back then wanted to go 150 miles an hour. Like, you know, everything was new, excited, fun. I want to fight hit. I want to fight every week. I mean, the Ryan now today, obviously he's mature. He learned the game. You learn with time, hanging out with Mayweather, with Canelo, with Oscar. You learn things. And I think he's learning of the business part right now and enjoying the sport of boxing. But I think at the same time, maybe still going 100 miles an hour because, you know, he's a young man that does aspire for great things, has the potential. But I'd like to see that process. And this is personally because of knowing him and knowing is the fight, in other words, is the fight with Haney a great fight? Absolutely. There's history there. 3 fights apiece. Is it one of the biggest fights to make? Absolutely. And it's great that now young fighters are taking risks and trying to fight each other early on in their career and not when it's, you know, marinated for too long by the time the fans lose interest. So I like this new era of young fighters daring to be great and wanting to fight each other. I think we've seen it with Teofimo. We've seen it with Haney. We've seen it with Ryan and Gervonta. And these guys all wanting to fight each other is good for boxing, regardless of the outcome later. But when I read that he wanted to fight Rolly, I thought, oh, great. Ryan fights Rolly, and if he beats Rolly, now he has a world title, making the fight with Haney now a unification. Going towards those days of De La Hoya against Trinidad. You know, that's the way that I liked it. But what I'm seeing and hearing and everything, I think we may see the Haney fight. So, you know, great. It is a tough fight. Again, they know each other very well. It is a tough fight. But at this level, Those should be tough fights. You know, that division right now just heated up. Teofimo, Devin, Matias, who throws 100 punches around. I mean, that division is going to be hot, and it's going to be hot for a while.
What about he went from top rank to Golden Boy, Jose Ramirez. How do you think a Ryan Garcia-Jose Ramirez fight would play out?
I think Ryan, it would be similar to a Duarte fight. I think Ryan would just be too fast. You know, no diss on Jose. I've known him for many years. Great kid, great champion. But a step too slow, and he'd be coming after Ryan, of course. That's his job in that fight. You know, I got to go in and close the distance and try to land my punches. But I think it'd be similar. Like Duarte was following Ryan, following him, trying to land the big punch, and got caught coming in. I think we see it similar. And remember, Duarte, fresh, hasn't been beat up, hasn't been hit. Jose's been in some more. So, but on Jose's part, does he look for that fight? Absolutely. That's without having a world title, Ryan is the champion because of who he is and his status, you know, in everything, in all aspects. He is that guy that everybody has that X on to target to win outside of a world champion.
On that podcast he was on recently, Robert, he touched on the Romero Duno fight that happened in the, I believe, Carson, California, out here in the LA area. Actually it was the Avery Sparrow fight. I'm sorry. And then Romero Duno's name was thrown in after Avery Sparrow went through his legal troubles during the fight week and all that. Ryan had mentioned, and I think he said this before, but he obviously mentioned it again, saying that Golden Boy was the one who kind of threw the story out there that he was scared of Romero Duno. He didn't want to take the fight. Ryan essentially admitted himself on the podcast saying that he's like, hey, I didn't train for this guy. Why would I want to fight him? So, you know, you were there at the time. You know, how did you guys address that with him and trying to address that sentiment that he had?
Well, the toughest thing of doing a fight, and running into, when you run into these kind of obstacles last minute, they're always last minute. So what you need to do is fix, you know, and fix the best way possible. So Avery had his issues. I think it was the day of the weigh-in. He was going out to a store to buy Pedialyte and buy Gatorades and stuff like that when he had his issue. So we lose him 24 hours from the fight. At that point, you're not going to find an opponent who's in the gym, on weight, in New York, ready to jump on a plane and head over there. So what's the fastest, easiest solution? Because Ryan needed a fight. And that's, you come out with whatever's available. Duno was on the card. There was never any intent of, well, let's build Duno to fight Ryan or anything like that. On my part, it was just like, hey, Duno's making some noise. He's got some traction. Nice following. Fun fighter to watch. It's on the card. Same weight class. You know, you never go to a fighter and say, you were going to fight an orthodox fighter, but I got a southpaw for you. Not last minute. But in this particular case, it was an option. Obviously, you have to present it. You're trying to save the show. You're trying to save him fighting, you know, all those weeks in training, all those tickets that were sold from his family and friends. So you throw options. I don't think it ever came out. And look, I'm not with Golden Boy now. I don't think there was an intent. I know I've heard sometimes, well, they wanted Duno to beat me. When you make a fight with two on your same stable, it is tough. You divide half the staff, because there's people that like this guy more, that maybe they've known him more. There's other people that, oh, you know, I like this guy more. But my particular role as a matchmaker, I just want to make fights that were exciting, fun, and that could entertain the crowd while developing your fighter. And I thought that fight, yes, would have been dangerous. I mean, when eventually it happened, never in my wildest dreams that this is going to be an easy fight for Ryan. But that's how you get to where you're at. You know, I saw Jermell Charlo after many years, now that he fought Canelo, and he saw me prior to the fight, introduced me to his family and friends, and said, this guy's the guy that would put me in tough with everybody. Hey, Rob, why'd you put me in tough all the time? I said, because that's what got you here. That's what got you to the Canelo fight. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been here. So I take pride in that, that, look, there was fights that there's development fights where, okay, you take it a little soft. Once you take off those training wheels, hey, we got to start progressing. You got to start getting better, and you got to start seeing different styles. And with Duno, it was a good fight to make. I mean, the Mexican-American versus the Filipino, both bringing good crowds, you know, always that rivalry. It was a good fight to make. Obviously, Ryan looked like $1 million, you know, knocked him out with one punch.
Who, ideally, from your matchmaking brain, would you want Ryan to fight next this year? We touched on Haney, but do you think as a matchmaker that is the appropriate next fight?
I just see it as let's just say I put my hat on and I'm Ryan's matchmaker, and no disrespect to his matchmakers, but I just would like a world title and then make that a unification. I see that as one of the best fights. In fact, when I met Haney and his father, Bill, many years ago, I met Devin and Bill. I wanted to sign him to Golden Boy. I told him this could be the modern day De La Hoya against Mayweather. You know, we just have to, he fights in February, then Devin fights in March. He fights in May, then Devin fights in July. I mean, just, you know, both of them going this way till eventually they meet at the top. They're very close to it now. Both of them are big names. Ryan, we've seen by the numbers, he can sell the pay-per-view if he has the right dance partner. Devin's the right dance partner because he is a very dangerous fight for Ryan. Again, they know each other very well. But I think Ryan gets a world title with one of the champions, and it makes it even a bigger fight. And he settles into the weight a little more. He's had one or two fights at you know, the super lightweight.
Where do you think he actually ends? That's a good question now that you made me think about it. Where do you think Ryan Garcia, at the end of his career, what weight does he finish his career at?
154, 147, 154, yeah.
Okay.
Ryan has the frame and physically has the body to carry up, you know, as he matures. You know, again, a lot of people throw in opinions. I remember seeing comments of Ryan, oh, he must be on something. Look at his body now. Look at what, because he was in the Canelo camp. It's like, yeah, you're comparing a 17-year-old body, 18-year-old body to a 22, 23-year-old body. Of course it's going to change. You know, it's called maturity. And yeah, if they put some strength and conditioning and into that as well, as you mature and get older, of course the muscle starts wearing. Testosterone takes over right there. But it's natural. And it's part of evolution. And I think that's where a lot of, you know, it's so easy. Also, in today's world with all the technology, how they can manipulate pictures and make them even look bigger than he was. So, you know, it's just, it's funny because that's the boxing fan. You know, they're never happy. They always got to throw and like never be happy. But you see the kid, I know he works hard. I know what he, you know, he wants the big fights. He's been saying that for years. But sometimes you have to slow it down, because if the fighter wants to run with it and go, of course, they want to eat the world.
Touching on another Golden Boy fighter, Alexis Rocha, you know, obviously, you know, very, very well. He just coming off a loss. I believe it was his first loss against Giovanni Santillan of Top Rank. Rocha's, I think, reported to come back pretty soon in the next couple months or so, where Santillan hasn't even have an announced fight, and he obviously was the victor out of that fight. You put out some tweets following the fight and even before the fight. You weren't a fan of the matchmaking of this bout. Tell us why.
Well, first, I have a lot of love. There's always been a very close bond to Lex. It was his second loss. The first loss, he lost to Rashidi Ellis.
Right.
But then he got back up and built his way back up. What bothered me of that fight, and again, no disrespect to the matchmakers. Look, it's a tough job. It's very easy to critique on Monday after the fight. Oh, I wouldn't have done it. That wasn't my intention. I wasn't attacking that. I was just upset that Rocha had lost in a fight that I felt like he's number one in the world. You should be, you're knocking on that door. Whether the Crawford fight can get made or not, because Crawford had obligations in the rematch or this and that, that's fine. I'm going to stay busy with stay busy fights. If I'm going to lose, I'm going to lose at the topest level for the biggest bag for the most. Because if you lose to Terrence Crawford in that world title fight, nobody's beating Terrence. Terrence is one of those fighters that I match in my fantasy matches at times. I'll be like, man, him against Aaron Pryor. Man, him against with fighters of back in the day. And I see Terrence as one of the few that I've ever just put it, that much attention that says he can beat fighters of the past as well. That's how good I feel Terrence is. So to lose to a Terrence Crawford, who's going to be a Hall of Famer, who's going to be a legendary fighter, who we'll be talking about years from now, it's no shame, but you're going to get paid. And that's not necessarily what his mindset is going into a fight, but, and this is no diss on Santillan, he earned that victory. He won fair and square and a great performance to him and his team, Robert Garcia. They were ready for that fight, but in great, you know, an honest question, who knew Giovanni Santillan prior to that fight? Now it flipped. Giovanni's going to be in the top three, top four, top five, if not number one in the world. He's ready. I guarantee you they'll take care, make sure nothing happens before that big fight. You know, why take a risk? That's when you're like, okay, I've made it to this part. Let's just stay steady, stay busy. Southpaw, Lex fighting a southpaw, that was great because he's getting ready for a Spence. He's getting ready for a Crawford. He's getting ready for those guys. But I have been trying to do a fight with Lex with Antonio DeMarco. In fact, Tony DeMarco would call me, hey, Roberto, I'm here. I'll fight Lex. And it was like, yeah, let me try to make that fight. And I like that fight because now you're fighting a former world champion who's a southpaw, who's towards the tail end of his career, if not, you know, very close, knocking on that door. But he had also put hands on Santillan in the eyes of many, beaten Santillan. So in boxing, there's never the safe opponent. But DeMarco met the qualifications of saying, okay, with not as much threat. Everybody knew DeMarco. He was a former world champion who beat my boy, Jorge Linares. So it's like, again, sometimes it's easy on Monday to say I wouldn't have done that on Saturday. But even before, I was like, you know, I've heard people say, oh, yeah, he approved the fight before. No, when they asked me what I thought, the fight was made. Hey, well, I'm going with my guy Lex, 100%.
Rocha, why do you think, obviously, you know, you didn't work for Top Rank, you worked for Golden Boy, but, you know, why do you think Santillan, after that win, you know, he has a lot of momentum, a lot of attention, and he still does, at least to the hardcore fan base especially, but, you know, but like I mentioned initially, Rocha's already been rumored to come back soon. His name's already thrown out there. We should be hearing probably an announcement soon. But we haven't heard anything about Santillan. You know, is Top Rank maybe missing the boat there? What do you think? Is he getting lost in the shuffle?
No. And that's easy to believe, to think that, because exactly why you said. But think of it this way. A Rocha fight right now coming back is a smaller level fight because you're not just going to put him in with anybody. You're going to put him in with somebody right now to get that confidence back. It's not an expensive fight. It's going to be on the other side, an opponent that I already read. I think one of the names mentioned is Virgil's last opponent. So, you know, went one round with Virgil. Something like that is much easier to make because it's less money. It's going to be an undercard. Giovanni Santillan, now on the other hand, again, he's one of those top three guys now in the ratings. You're not just going to match him real quick. You know, one, He's earned it. He needs to get paid. But now you're not just going to put him in with anybody because you're going to protect that number one position to get into that world title fight soon. If not next, soon. And that's why we haven't heard anything because, one, it's probably a more expensive fight, but they got to get that right opponent. They got to get the date. Where are we going to take it? Maybe he took some time off. We don't know of outside activities, but I think we'll be hearing of him soon. I think, you know, obviously we just came off the holidays, coming into the new year. Everybody's putting out their schedule. I think we'll be hearing something very soon because obviously he's now got the attention of the boxing world.
And then Rocha has two new stable mates over there. We mentioned Jose Ramirez and then Arnold Barboza Jr. Obviously, most of their careers have been at 140. Rocha's a 147 fighter. But could you see maybe, you know, we talked about Canelo Benavidez Munguia being like a round robin. Could you see a round robin with those three, all three Mexican?
You know, I think we'll see Barboza going in for one of those big fights. I think he's earned it. He's right there towards the top at the 140 division. Lex, believe it or not, had always said, I think I can make 140. And I'm like, you're crazy. No, stay at 47. You're strong. You're looking good. I think 140 would deplete him. And 147 is one of those biggest jump divisions, you know, from 40 to 47. So I think we'll still see. I mean, Jose Ramirez and Lex Rocha would be a great fight. You'd get both corners in the ring again with Hector and Robert Garcia. So that could be a good fight to see. But I don't know if Ramirez is wanting to jump to 47 unless it's a big, big fight.
And then, you know, we kind of touched on danced around the topic throughout these last couple topics. But obviously, you've been gone from Golden Boy for a little over a year now. I believe last month, or December was a year. You had mentioned that your contract wasn't renewed. You know, for our listeners who haven't heard from you, we know you've done stories and some other interviews prior, but there's some people, maybe a lot of people on our listening base. This is the first time they're hearing from you in a while. What could you tell us about your departure?
Well, I mean, it was 15 beautiful years at Golden Boy. Obviously, was very fortunate to work with some of the greatest athletes, you know, that ever stepped into the ring. For that, I'm honored. For that, I learned so much from not only the athletes, but also on the promotional side. And now it's before Golden Boy, I was with Marco Barrera and a few other fighters. So now I've done both sides. I've sat on both sides of the desk, you know, and realized where my passion is. Even in the matchmaking through the years, it was always working with that fighter and the team, developing them. So there was some calls to work with other promotions. But it's like I took some time off to say, okay, really, what do I want to do? And I started getting, I mean, for that, I'm very grateful. I thank God because I started getting a lot of calls from world champions to young prospects to old fighters that were under Golden Boy at one time and had parted ways. So it kept me towards the, you know, after a few months last year, it's like, all right, let's go help these fighters. It kept me really busy. Went with Jorge Linares to Liverpool, was out there with Jason Quigley in Ireland twice. Yvette Zamora, former world champion, fighting for another interim title. We were in La Paz. So it was a lot of travels in Montreal with Ronald Ellis against an old Golden Boy fighter, Eric Bazinian. So there was a lot of work, travel, advising him, and I enjoyed it. I didn't have that stress that comes with the job of matchmaking. You know, every show, a fight falls, the guy got hurt, and then I didn't have that because now I'm working with one fight. It could happen. That one fighter that you have taken to a promoter now gets injured, pulls out, doesn't make weight. But I was fortunate. I think one of the most stressful ones was I did a fight a couple of back-to-back with Matchroom. I took Danielito Zorrilla from Puerto Rico to fight Regis. And I was so stressed because the fight was, you know, let's be honest, it was a stinker. And I was like, come on, Zorrilla, throw. And I'm just thinking, man. But then you see the scorecards were really close. And I'm like, wow, Zorrilla, if you would have thrown a little more, Danielito would have won the world title. We were that close. whether the scorecard, you know, merited that close. I mean, I, with all due respect, and Zorrilla was my guy, I thought it was wider, but hey, I'll take it if a judge sees it that way. And I felt like, man, you know, because you want to deliver now. I wanted to deliver to the fans, yeah, but I also want to deliver for the promoter to say, hey, you brought an exciting fighter. Let's bring him back, whether he wins or loses. Well, then you see Regis's next fight. So I'm like, hey, wait a minute, Eddie. It wasn't the Zorrilla, it was Regis, you know? But there's lots of love for Regis as well. But it was like, that was one that I was like, I was sweating. Then the following week, we went with Jason Quigley to New York against Berlanga. And I was like, man, hopefully this is not, comparable to Zorrilla and Regis and Zorrilla. Hopefully this is a barn burner and exciting. And it was, you know, Jason went out there and fought his heart out. And Berlanga is a young, strong fighter trying to knock your head off. So it made for an exciting fight in New York that night. But no, I've been working with fighters. Later this month, we have Pablo Cesar Camino fighting a world title eliminator on a matchroom card. You know, a lot of the fighters that I'm working with, a lot of them aren't at the tail end of their career. So I'm looking for opportunities for them to make money more than world titles right now, to at least set themselves for life or at least have something. But a lot of them know me from the years at Golden Boy or Barrera, and some of them are calling me back. So I appreciate that. Also working with a young man, WBA super featherweight world champion, Lamont Roach Jr. Him and his team, we've always been close, and it's been an honor to be right there side by side. And it was a dream come true for him and his father. And I was just real proud to be there when he won the world title.
Do you have any regrets from your time at Golden Boy?
I mean, there's regrets. One, if I had to do it all over again, I would have done the Jorge Linares, Yeyo Thompson fight. We were coming off the loss with DeMarco, and I thought, let's do this fight. Why not get a win in between and then go do the DeMarco rematch? But no, to answer your question, no regrets. I mean, look, every part of life is an experience to grow. For me to have said one day, first, I love boxing. That's, as a little kid, that was my sport. My dad instilled it in me. I loved it. Never in my wildest dreams would I have thought one day I'm going to be side by side with Marco Antonio Barrera, advising him or, and much less after that to say, I'm going to be the matchmaker and developing and signing fighters for who was at the top of the game, one of the biggest promoters in the world and so busy. So no regrets there. I loved every moment of it. There was always passion. I mean, to be honest, if you don't have passion and love it as a matchmaker, you're going to go. You're not going to handle that stress. You're not going to – you put up with those hours. You put up with that stress. You put up with everything because there is the love and the passion for boxing. But now it's time to – that part, that chapter ended. Let's go on to the next chapter, which I want to make as many world champions as I come because I want to make those dreams come true. I really enjoy working with the young fighters and with fighters in general.
When you were there at Golden Boy, Robert, did you have any, like, could you feel like have a sense of the writing on the wall of your departure, or was it kind of just thrown at you like from one day to the next?
No. I saw the writing a few months before. I saw the writing on the wall a few months before. I mean, it wasn't a long time before. It wasn't a week or two before. It was just when the contract wasn't renewed, it wasn't a shock. It was just like, okay, look, it's been 15 beautiful years and you know what? Wish you all the best. And, you know, it's something that I turned the page. However, never know. Maybe I come in with the next Ryan Garcia and they want to sign him. I'm willing to work. Look, if it makes sense for the fighter, because there's going to be certain fighters that fit in certain promotions better than others. If it makes sense, it makes business, let's move forward, and then I'm all for it.
Have you had any contact with Eric Gomez, Oscar De La Hoya, anybody at Golden Boy since your departure?
Initially, there was some contact. after that, no, they've been real busy. I've been real busy. And it's been like, okay, it's boxing. I've been to some of their shows. Obviously, I go now as a fan and attend because I'm going to support those guys that I worked with. Virgil Ortiz, Oscar Duarte when he fought Ryan Garcia. Ryan Garcia when he fought Duarte, I was intrigued as someone that had built both of them and saying, I love the matchup. Again, that one I saw as a dangerous fight for Ryan. Coming off the Gervonta loss by stoppage, fighting a big puncher. Then again, it shows you how Ryan doesn't get the credit that he deserves. Everybody was like, who's Oscar Duarte? Well, I knew Oscar Duarte. I was impressed with Oscar Duarte. I signed Oscar Duarte. And one thing that Oscar has is the kid could punch.
And then Golden Boy, you know, it seems like they're De La Hoya's already had a mention in interviews that he wants to kind of build a secondary office or maybe another headquarters in Las Vegas. Was that a conversation that was happening even years before when you were there? Was that always a plan or was that something more recent?
No, I think that's something more recent. Obviously, he's moved to Vegas, living in Vegas. Maybe that's where that, you know, popped up. Golden Boy as a promoter in the U.S. is going to do cards in Vegas. I mean, that's the mecca of boxing. But Southern California is always going to be home, you know, regardless if they move headquarters, if they move that. Oscar's from East L.A., the fan base. Doesn't travel. They live in LA. You know, the ones that go to Vegas, a lot of them are coming from LA. So LA's still going to be, Southern California is still going to be very important for that promotion.
And now you've been, since your departure from Golden Boy, you've been working with Pro Box TV. Can you tell us your experience with them so far and what you've been doing with them?
I've been working with, Matchroom. I've worked, I have a tiger, my friend Camille out in Montreal. And yes, a couple fighters with Pro Box, great people. Gary Jonas, I've known for a few years. Chris, Ryan, all their team. I mean, Chico Rivas, all their team are really good. They have something there that I could see growing. A lot of times you see those fights. They're 50-50 fights. I mean, look, I've taken with Pro Box, I have Pablo Cesar Cano. He picked up a big win on his debut with them and now is in a world title eliminator coming up later this month. Most recently, Romero Duno, who we just talked about, they reached out to me, helped me get some fights. They hadn't fought in a long time, put him on a Pro Box show. Unfortunately, it didn't go his way. But there's a lot of activity, and there's a couple more fighters in line right now that we're working on with them to get them those opportunities. What I tell them is, look, I'll bring you fighters that are at basically they're made fighters. If they get the win, the next fight could be a big fight. And then from there, maybe if they win that one, then, you know, it's not a long-term investment. It's a quick turnaround to get these guys in the door. If they get a couple wins, next thing you know, they're in the rankings and ready to go.
You mentioned that you've had other promoters and promotional companies reach out to you since your departure, you know, offering you, positions or, you know, maybe long-term deals and something like that. You touched on Matchroom. You work with a couple different promoters, obviously Matchroom, Eddie Hearn, prominent promoter in the game. Have you had a conversation with Eddie Hearn, like an in-depth conversation about your future?
No. I mean, Eddie was very supportive when I mentioned to him that I was going to manage, fighters and that I would love to have some fighters with his promotional company. And not just now independent, through the years, I did a lot of work with Matchroom, took Jorge Linares 3 times to the UK, 4 after since this last one. But it's always been a pleasure to work with them. I mean, everybody from the staff to everybody, it's just, it reminds me a lot of when I first started at Golden Boy, a lot of young and people that love boxing and love to work and everybody working together. That's what I see in Matchroom right now. You know, they have a great team. They got a great set of mind and you know, it's just a pleasure to deal with and a pleasure to work with them.
As we can see the shift in boxing programming going from traditional linear TV to streaming, Obviously, DAZN's been in the game now since about 2018, so they have some type of footprint. PBC now going to Amazon Prime Video. That deal should be starting in March. That's the plan right now. You know, what's your take on that whole transition? Is it going to work? I mean, Amazon has obviously hundreds of millions of subscribers, but is that going to transition to viewers? What's your take on that whole situation?
I think the boxing's, you know, there's always been, oh, boxing's dying. The sport's not, boxing's at an all. I mean, it just depends on the fights. If the fights are good, people are going to tune in to see it. And we saw that with Ryan Garcia and Gervonta, two young fighters that pulled in numbers like if they had been around for many years as champions, you know? That's just where we're going. It's unfortunate that HBO and Showtime close shop, but hey, who knows? They may come back one day, you know, and hopefully so. But when one door closes, another one opens. We saw that with HBO and Showtime. Then came DAZN and now Amazon Prime. So I think we just have to, you know, change with the times and move forward. But as long as the right fights are made, people set aside their egos, stop taking scores. One promoter is going to beat the other promoter one day. And guess what? It just don't keep score. Just keep making money, make fights, and fighters make money and the fans win. If you put the best against the best, boxing will always be on top. I mean, it's a beautiful sport. It's a great sport. We learn so much from these fighters, from what they go through, that you could adapt that into your everyday life. But it's through boxing. I mean, if the fans really look into it, I'm having a rough day today. Okay, it's another round. Let's go. Get out of it and go on and fix it the next round, the next day, the next month, whatever it applies to. It's not always going to be easy. You're not always going to get the knockout. You're going to get dropped a couple of times. You're going to get cut. Move forward and move on. But we learned so much from it. Again, I think in these platforms, yeah, they can do great. It's just especially if that's the only one. What we need to stop is every event make it a pay-per-view. You got to, you know, slow it down on that part, you know, and make the extravaganza, that main event, that Super Bowl of boxing. Okay, pay-per-view. But in general, keep those fights so the fans could see it at no cost or under a subscription so that they can start getting to know these young fighters before you tell them, okay, now you got to pay for it.
The superpower of streaming services, Netflix, they just announced a deal with the WWE for their flagship show, that Monday Night Raw. That's a big deal.
Huge.
Live.
Huge.
Whether people agree with it or not, you know, sports, they call it sports entertainment. It's a live broadcast. That kind of opens the door because the WWE is now owned by the new company called TKO. Endeavor, Ari Emanuel, who owns the UFC. You know, that door opened to combat sports a lot more, especially boxing. Do you think it's just a matter of if, not when, Netflix gets into boxing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is huge, and it's a good step in the right direction. I mean, obviously two different sports, but when they see what they do with, you know, the wrestling, there could only be a curiosity or somebody that likes boxing and not wrestling within the corporation to say, okay, look, this is so good. Let's less budget, but let's go to boxing. And then that's another door that opens. Again, we've been hearing it for years. Boxing's dead. Boxing's dead. It's alive. Make the right fights and it's alive. It's better than ever.
You think that this new company, TKO, who owns the UFC, WWE, and some other companies, you know, there was, I don't want to call it a report, but there was a rumor out there that TKO is interested in buying Top Rank. That was some information out there from, I believe it was started from one of your favorite personalities on Twitter. Do you think that I try to dance around it for you?
Thank you.
do you think that comes to fruition? Or, I mean, it seems likely, right? They go into WWE, UFC, the next transition would be to boxing, right?
Absolutely. And rather than see, especially when they have the funds and the finances are there, it's better to go buy an established company that already has that brand, that already has that library, that already has the experience of putting on the show, than starting up from new, from square one, and hiring people as a... And again, some have to do it because they don't have the big bankroll, right? But in this particular case, if they go into boxing, I believe that that's a possibility, whether it's Top Rank or another company that they go and say, hey, we're willing to buy you, and keep, you know, the same people running it. But that would be amazing, because then we have an established company on an amazing network.
We talked about the LA area for Golden Boy, and, you know, how those fans, there's a dedicated fan base there. You know, they won't travel that far, but, you know, maybe to Vegas. But, you know, you can't abandon the LA market, obviously, from, you know, that from your time at Golden Boy. Saudi Arabia, the last couple of years, especially now, is a new prominent player in the boxing world, you know, trying to have these big fights. You know, they've been putting a lot of big fights in that country. You know, what's your take on that in terms of, you know, because a lot of fans, obviously, in the United States, big boxing fans, especially in England, the United States, LA, New York, Florida, Texas, Phoenix. But Saudi Arabia is now getting these big marquee fights. Obviously, financially, they have the checkbook. That's a big deal behind it. But do you think that long term, this might hurt the fandom of the sport?
No, not at all. Boxing's worldwide. We watch it from Zaire back in the day. We watch it from the Thriller in Manila. We watch it. If the fight is big, we're going to tune in and watch. Saudi Arabia today is what Vegas was many years ago. You know, it's a desert with a lot of casinos in Vegas. Well, here, I'm not calling the desert, you know, the country, but it's just on the other side. Now, it's going to be difficult for Americans to go out there because it's a farther travel, like, you know, longer on the flight and everything. But the surrounding countries, like Vegas is for Mexico, right, you know, closer, they'll be able to go. Now they don't have to travel all the way to Vegas. They can go watch those fights. So, again, they're not going to have every card, every fight. They're going to have the big ones. So they're on the map now because of the purses, because of the level of fights. That's where we can see that Mecca fight. That's where we can get excited and say, wow, they were able to do it. Why does Vegas get some of the biggest fights in the sport? They roll out that carpet, say, hey, we'll pay for this fight, but bring it to Vegas. And they, obviously, they make money. So has it hurt the fan base because of the big fights in Vegas? Yes and no, because when you go to Vegas, you know you're going for a big fight. It's an event, a weekend event. Maybe now it's going to be a week event because you're going to fly so far out that you make a trip of it. Creates tourism, creates other revenue. You know, a lot of times I as a fan said, man, this fight belongs more in Texas, for say, in a big stadium, so that all the fans can go. Even the fan that paid for the $10 ticket, but he was there. But when you collected that entire stadium of 50,000 people, what the gate could be, and compared it to what Vegas site fee would be in a half an arena, half the size, or 20,000 instead of 60,000, but Vegas paid this big guarantee to bring it. At the end of the day, people would say, well, the promoters are being greedy. No, the promoter has to get that money so the fighter can get paid and they can be happy. So a lot of the times it has to be the fighter that says, look, I'm willing to sacrifice the pay to take it to this stadium. It's not both. Canelo did it a couple times as he fought in stadiums, you know, but Vegas might have said, hey, I'll pay more, but he wanted to take these fights into bigger stadiums. There's also that self of like fulfillment that now it's not about money. It's about making these big events and how they look. I mean, they are impressive when you're in a stadium, 60, 70,000 people, 80,000, you know, it fulfills you.
What prospects should we look out for that are on your watch list right now?
Well, there's a young man that he's going to be making his debut hopefully very soon. He's out of California. His name is Joel Iriarte. That's a kid everybody wants to see. 15-time national champion. Tremendous discipline. I know a couple weeks ago he was sparring with Conor Benn. Prior to that, he was sparring with Arnold Barboza. This is a kid everybody wants to keep their eye on. Definitely, definitely a future world champion.
Does he have a fight date coming up?
Hopefully soon. Right now he's, you know, waiting. Management's been talking to a couple promoters, looking at different deals, and hopefully have an announcement very soon, which will have an announcement of his signing and also hopefully his first pro debut.
Where would you want his pro debut to be if you could have that power? Like city, what do you think?
Las Vegas on a big undercard, you know, because this is how special this kid is, even if it's highlights, but to be televised, to show that hard work pays off. But, you know, when you're talented and dedicated, big things can come your way at a faster pace.
You're from San Francisco. This Sunday, the 49ers, they're back in it. Give me your take. How happy are you?
I am very happy. I'm stoked. Sweet revenge, it's called. Last time we were in this position, it didn't go our way. It was in Miami, and we lost to the Chiefs. But Vegas, it's going to be sweet revenge. This team is – it reminds me a lot of the 80s. I mean, these guys are playing very well together. I'm going to be there. I'm excited that I'm going to be there. I better not go home 0-2. I better go home 1-1. But I'm confident it's going to be a great game. And I'm confident in Purdy and the rest of the team.
Do you think it'll be competitive? Because from what we've seen, the 49ers are seemingly getting the betting odds favorite. You know, top two teams in the league in the Super Bowl. Do you think it's going to be competitive, or Absolutely. Are the Niners going to run away?
I hope so, for my stress factor, that they run away so that there's no stress in the game. But I believe it will be competitive, because you can never count the Chiefs out. You can never count them out. Patrick Mahomes shown it time and time, especially against, I mean, I think here in Miami, it was 7 minutes and we would have become the Super Bowl champions. And he just destroyed us. And it was like, what happened in 7 minutes? How could this fall apart? But so you can never count him out. The experience, he's been there. This is fifth time, I think, fourth time in five seasons. I mean, again, experience counts a lot. Purdy's his first season as a starter, and he's there. But Mr. Irrelevant was born for this. I mean, he's shown it. And I think 49ers will have a trophy again. Once again, it's been a long time coming.
What do you? What's your take on the Taylor Swift being involved and being all over the NFL broadcast?
A, brings more eyes, brings attention, brings a different group. It's funny because my nephew was telling me, oh, yeah, you're going to watch the Taylor Bowl? I'm like, what? They've even changed it to that. But you know what? If it brings on more interest, NFL already has a lot, especially the Super Bowl, but the more the merrier.
Well, Robert, I appreciate it. I appreciate your time tonight. We know you're a busy man. It seems like you're even busier now than you were when you were a full-time matchmaker. So that's great. You know, our listeners have been messaging us for a while, trying to get you back on. So we're glad that we could get you back on. Next time we'll get you back on. Hopefully Mike can be here. He had some scheduling conflicts, but he'll be on next week. You know, before we sign off here, Robert, go ahead and let our listeners know where they can find you, what you got coming up, anything you want to plug. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Please, I hope everything's well with Mike. It gets solved. And always a pleasure. I really appreciate it. For those listeners that were asking, I thank you so much. I'm good. I'm enjoying life. I'm hopefully we'll have a mandatory with Pablo Cesar Cano later this month. And they can find me on social media, on Instagram and Twitter, on Michelada Time. Obviously, I like my Micheladas. That was many years ago, but I enjoy them. But they can find me anytime they want to send a message, question, anything. I'm available for them. And it'd be an honor to be back on when Mike's back.
We appreciate it. We appreciate it, Robert. So for our guest of the week, and Robert Diaz, who might be the most busiest man in the sport today. I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.